Hello, this is Brian Tracy, and welcome to this teleseminar on Eat That Frog. And Eat That Frog is a book that I wrote, and this teleseminar is actually going to be a piggyback on that book and go far beyond it. The book has now sold more than 3 million copies in 32 languages. It's the most popular single book on time management in the world, all over the world. And the reason is because the principles it teaches and help you increase your productivity, performance, and output are so powerful and so simple that people have told me, everywhere I go, this book changed my life. This is the best book I've ever written. Of course, when they say, this is the best book I've ever written, I said, do you read much? But nonetheless, it's had an enormous impact on people. And there's a very good reason for that, is that your rewards in life of all kinds will always be determined by your results, by the results that you get for other people, whether it's at home with your family, but especially in your work. In life, there's only one way for a person to earn a lot of money, and that is to add value. And you add value. Let me start over again. This is Brian Tracy, and welcome to this teleseminar. In the time ahead, we're going to learn how to get more done faster and become more productive than ever before. And the fact is that in life, your results determine your rewards. In business, everything is results. In personal life, results are important as well. But sometimes I will ask an audience, how many people here work on commission? And a few hands will go up in the audience, especially if it's managers or accountants. And I'll say, well, you know, the truth is that everybody works on commission. Everybody gets a piece of the action. Everybody gets a percentage of the value that they create. So throughout all of history, if one of your goals is to earn a lot of money, the answer is to add value. Look for ways to add value and add so much value that you keep a percentage of it. And that's why they say in companies their average earnings are this, their average earnings are that. The average in one industry is 5% per annum, 6%. Oil companies earn about 7 or 8% profit per annum. That's their commission for the value that they create for all of their activities at the end of the day. And in life, the only way that you can create more value is by becoming more productive. Now, it's interesting. When you start off your life, you start off very much like a runner in a marathon. And everybody lines up at the starting line. And everybody has very limited ability to create value. Limited earning ability, limited skills. And that's why we call things entry-level jobs. These are jobs where you get your foot on the first rung of the ladder because you don't have much ability to create much value. Well, then the race begins. And there's lots of research on this, really exciting research. It shows that some people over the course of the next 10 or 20 years get way out in front and dramatically increase their earning ability, their value, and other people stay back in the pack, most of them, and many people fall way, way behind, find themselves unemployed for long periods of time, earning very little when they do work, and always worrying about money. Now, here's the great discovery, is everybody starts off at the line, starts off with pretty much the same mental ability. Some people went to better schools. Some people went to worse schools. Some people came from good families. Some people came from bad families. But in terms of mental capability, almost everybody has pretty much the same. And the difference is not the inherent ability that you have. It's the way that you apply that ability. So this program, Eat That Frog, comes from a story by Mark Twain. And Mark Twain said that if the first thing you do each morning is you get up and eat a live frog, you'll have the satisfaction of knowing that's probably the worst thing that's going to happen to you all day long. Now, there's two corollaries to that. Corollary number one is that if you have to eat more than one frog, eat the ugliest one first. In time management, we say, do the worst first. The worst is always your biggest, ugliest task. It's also the one the most valuable, most important, and where you add the most value to your business and to yourself. And the second corollary is if you have two frogs to eat, the second corollary is that if you have to eat a frog at all, it doesn't pay to sit and look at it for too long. In other words, if you have to do a major task, just do it. Just get on with it. Take the task and just plunge in. The hardest of all things, and we'll talk about how you can overcome the natural tendency to procrastination that most people have as we go a little further. Now, the rule is you cannot manage time. All the books on time management are false in this sense, is that you can only manage yourself. Time management is actually life management. It's managing your own personal self. I spoke to an expert on time management. He said something I never forgot. He said, time management means controlling the sequence of events. And I thought, wow, think about that. Controlling the sequence of events. In time management, you determine what you're going to do first, what you're going to do second, and what you're not going to do at all if you don't have time. And in your ability to control the sequence of events in your life, you determine your entire life. It's the most amazing darn thing. And we'll talk about this as we go along. Now, here's another point, is you cannot save time. You can only spend time, because time goes past in an inexorable fashion. It just goes like a metronome. It just goes. You can't slow it down, and you can't get it back. It's irretrievable, once it's gone forever. So you can't save time. You can only spend it differently. You can only spend it on things of higher value. And therein lies the secret of success. It's people who are successful spend the time that they have. And everybody has the same 24 hours every single day. Top people spend their time differently. And poor people, people who are struggling, spend their time indifferently or on low-value activities. Now, here's the great tragedy, and actually it's a great blessing. The tragedy is that whatever you do repeatedly over and over again soon becomes a habit. But you can overcome bad habits with good habits. All habits are learnable. So if you have developed bad habits of poor productivity, of wasting time, or doing things of low value, you can overcome those habits with good habits by repetition. You can learn the habits you need to achieve all the goals that you want. The rule is that good habits are hard to form, but easy to live with. Bad habits are easy to form, but hard to live with. And of course, what we're doing is we're talking about self-discipline here. Now, it's hard to develop a new habit. It's hard initially, but once you've developed the habit, it's automatic and easy. You just get up in the morning, and you just go to work on your major task, and you just ignore all distractions, and you just stay at it until it's done. And your productivity, performance, and output doubles and then doubles again. So, the starting point of getting your time under control is to understand this: you cannot do more things. You cannot be more efficient and effective. In fact, the only way you can get your time under control is by stopping doing things. You have to stop doing things of low value. And this is what is called creative abandonment. Creative abandonment is where you abandon tasks that are of no value. We say that if you're going to have a to-do list each day, you should also have a not-to-do list each day. Why? Because by clearly thinking through the things that you're not going to do until you've done other things, you dramatically increase your effectiveness. So, here's one of the greatest tools for time management, personal management, ever discovered. Maybe number one. And I call it a quink analysis, K-W-I-N-K, quink. And it requires that you ask this question: is there anything in my life that I'm doing today that, knowing what I now know, quink, I wouldn't get into again today if I had to do it over? We call this zero-based thinking. Zero-based thinking is where you draw a line under every decision you've ever made, and you ask yourself today, based on the situation today, based on your experience in the situation today, would you get into it again? Would you start it up again if you had to do it over? Because it's impossible to get your time and your life under control if there's something right in the middle of your life that usually takes up a lot of time and energy, causes a lot of stress, that you wouldn't even get into again. So you need what is called the C word to manage your time correctly. And the C word is courage. You need to have the courage to look at your life clearly and be honest with yourself and others. And so the first question you ask, is there any relationship in your life, personal or business, that you wouldn't get into again today if you had to do it over? Is there any person working for you that you wouldn't hire again today, or assign or delegate or put in a particular position? Is there anyone you wouldn't go to work with or go into partnership with? If the answer is no, the next question is, how do you get out and how fast? Once you have reached the point where, when you do a quink analysis, knowing what I now know, and the answer is no, it's too late to save the situation. Many people transform their companies. I just spoke yesterday to about 300 owners of multi-million dollar companies, and as I shared this principle with them, I saw people nodding all over the room. And I know these people are going to go back and going to make some major staff changes when they get back from the conference. And so the critical question is stress. You can always tell if you're in a bad situation because it causes you stress. So I always ask, would I get into this situation again if I had to do it over? Now, the second area of quink analysis, zero-based thinking, has to do with any part of your business, any part of your career. Is there any expenditure, any process, any customer, any product or service, any market, is there anything that you're doing in your business today that, in retrospect, knowing what you now know, you wouldn't start it up again? Remember, 80% of new products fail within the first year. Almost everything you do fails eventually. And sometimes you know why and sometimes you don't, but it fails anyway because that's just the nature of rapid change. And the smartest thing of all is if something's not working is to cut your losses. Say, you know, it seemed like a good idea at the time, but it's not really working, and knowing what I now know, I wouldn't start it up again. Cut your losses. Never be afraid to say, I was wrong. I've changed my mind. It's not a good idea. It's only men and women of character and courage and integrity who can admit quite honestly that they've got new information and they've changed their mind. It's people who are weak who cannot admit it, so they keep covering it up and stonewalling and so on. Now, the third area where you do a zero-based thinking analysis has to do with any investment of time or money or emotion. Sometimes you invest a lot of time in a goal or in a career or in an activity, and you realize that knowing what you now know, it's not a great idea. And just simply stop doing it. Sometimes you invest a lot of money in something and you've lost a lot of money. The answer is, would you start investing again today, knowing what you now know? And if the answer is no, stop doing it. And the third area has to do with emotion. Sometimes you invest a lot of emotion in a person, a relationship, a career, and people have a very, very funny way of not wanting to lose. That's in the stock market, people will keep investments that are losing money, hoping they'll make their money back, and they'll sell investments that are profitable in order to support their losing investments. It's the same thing in life. Is we hate to admit that we lost our time or lost our money, so what we do is we keep throwing good money or good time or good emotion after bad. So those are the keys. First of all, clear the deck. Make sure that there's nothing that you're doing today that you wouldn't get into again today. And remember that to do something new, you must stop doing something old. To get control of your life, you've got to stop doing the things that are taking up too much time and getting you too few results. Now, this brings us to another really important part of eating that frog, and it has to do with the way top people think most of the time. And I've studied this for years, and you find that most people think of their income. That's what I want to talk about now. Most people think about their income in terms of how much they earn in a year or a month or a pay period. Top people, instead, think about their income in terms of how much they earn each hour. And I learned this from a very successful self-made multimillionaire many years ago. Is the first question he asked me was how much do you earn per hour? What's your hourly rate? And I never thought about that. I thought of making money in a weekly, a monthly way, a year, having bills and everything else. Well, he forced me to think it through. And as I thought it through, I realized that there were some activities that pay far, far more on an hourly basis than others. And so you always have to ask yourself, is what is your hourly rate? Now, how do you determine your hourly rate? Well, it's very simple. You take your last year's gross income, and you just simply divide it by the number 2,000. 2,000 is roughly the number that hardworking business owner, entrepreneur, professional in our society works each year, 2,000 hours. Now, maybe less or maybe more, but using that as a guess, if you earned $50,000 last year, then that meant that you earned $25 an hour, 8 hours a day, 250 days out of the year. If you earned $100,000 divided by 2,000, it means that you earned $50 an hour. So you take not only the amount that you're earning, but the amount that you want to earn, your goal. So let's say you earn $50,000 and you want to double it and you want to make $100,000. Well, before you were earning $25 an hour, now you have to earn $50 an hour. And here's the rule. Stop doing anything that does not pay you your desired hourly rate. So we have people make a list of everything that they do and look at this list in the course of a week or a month, and they're really quite shocked to see how many things they do that somebody else could do for $10 an hour. But remember, the law of the excluded alternative in life says that doing one thing means not doing something else. So one of the marks of the superior person is they're continually looking at what they're doing and saying, before I do this, what will I have to not do in order to do this? And then they realize that maybe what they're thinking of doing is a far lower value than something else. So do this quick analysis, and then you go to the next. Start again. So once you've determined your hourly rate, how do you determine what are the most important things that you do? And this brings us to what we call the law of three. Now, the law of three is one of the great discoveries of human performance. What it says that is if you make a list of everything that you do in the course of a week or a month, and you go over that list, you'll find there's only three things on that list that account for 90% of your performance, productivity, and output. There's only three things. So the question is, what are the three things that account for your greatest value? And here's where you ask the three magic questions. You take a look at your list of things that you do on a weekly or annual basis, and then you ask yourself, if I could only do one thing on this list all day long, which one activity would contribute the most value to my work? Now, this is an important word, contribution. It's the most important word in the world of work, in the world of financial success, is to look at your list and say, what can I do or what do I do that makes the greatest contribution? And then if you look at your list, it will pop out at you. There's one thing that you do that makes a greater contribution than anything else. So say, if I could only do one thing all day long, which one activity would it be? And then put a circle around it. Then you ask the question again. You say, now, if I could only do two activities all day long, which would be number two? And put a circle around that. And then ask yourself the question again. If I could only do three things all day long, what would be number three? Now, these three will usually pop out at you. If you don't know what they are, you've got to find out. It's really important. You cannot improve your productivity, performance, and output if you don't know what they are. So what you do is you ask yourself and you say, all right, what are the big three? Now, if you look at it, you'll find that these three are the most important things that you do, and that everything else is a complementary task, a support task, a side task, an irrelevant task, a fun task, and an unimportant task. So here's the rule. All day long, do only these three things. And I'm going to give you one of the greatest time management rules of all. It's do fewer things, but do more important things, and do more of them, and do them more often, and get better at them. Now, this is so important. It is the key to success. You'll find that all successful people identify the most important things they can do. They do them more of the time. They do them more often. And they get continually better at them. And as a result, their productivity, performance, output, income, promotion goes up and up and up. You see, there's a rule that says that the very worst use of time is to do very well what need not be done at all. And what that means is that many people will spend a lot of time working very, very busily on things of low value, and they'll even get them done. But it actually sabotages their career. It doesn't help them. It actually hurts them, because doing these low-value things is keeping them away from the high-value things that could really make a difference in your life. So think about your hourly rate. And from now on, use the greatest time management word of all, which is the word no. Whenever something comes up that is not the highest and best use of your time, just say no. I'm not going to do things that are irrelevant. I'm not going to do things that have no value. Because whatever you do repeatedly becomes a habit. And once you slip into the habit, you're in real trouble. Now, there's two major enemies of high performance, especially in times of turbulence. Enemy number one is your comfort zone. Now, your comfort zone is something that you develop, sometimes very quickly, as you sit in a certain seat at a party, and you keep going back to that seat over and over again. You develop a comfort zone in 1 minute by sitting in that seat first thing that you go in. Sometimes it takes a long time to develop a comfort zone. But human beings are creatures of habit, and we constantly look to simplify and standardize our lives. This is both good and bad. You put your groceries away in the same place. You put your clothes away in the same cabinets. You drive the same way to work because it's the fastest and most efficient and so on. Comfort zones are good because they enable you to systematize and automatize things that don't take any thinking. But they're bad because you can slip into a comfort zone doing things that are of low value or no value or even harmful things. For example, dieting habits, exercise habits, health habits. You can get into the habit of doing things that are very harmful to you that are in the long run. People get into the habit of eating late, having a couple of drinks at dinner, and having dessert. Well, you don't even notice it for a while, that pretty soon you're 5 pounds, 10 pounds, 15, 20 pounds, and 60% of the American population is now overweight and 30% are obese. What happened? Well, when these people were kids, they were all thin and trim. And then what they did is they got into bad habits. They got into a comfort zone. Once you get into a comfort zone, the very idea of not going into your comfort zone each day makes you very uncomfortable, makes you tense and nervous and anxious. And I'll give you an example. There's a woman wrote a book last year called Don't Check Your Email in the Morning. And I think the title is a great title because as soon as a person reads that, many people's hearts stop, their stomach sinks, because they're accustomed to checking their email every morning and sometimes all day long and in the evening. And sometimes they get up at night to check it and they run to it in the morning to check their email. Checking the email has become a habit. And, you know, 90% of what appears on your email is irrelevant, and the other 10% can probably be dealt with later or by someone else. But people get into a habit of checking their email. They get in the habit of coming home at night and watching television. They get in the habit of driving around listening to music. They get into a habit of idle socializing, coming in late and leaving early. So these habits can be broken, but you've got to be very, very clear about how to do it. So here's one of the greatest of all time savers. And when I started studying time management, which I did for 25 years, I came across this concept, and it was simply this, is get better at your key tasks. Get better at the most important things you do. There's nothing that will increase your income and move you ahead faster than to become really, really good at the most important things you do. So one of the things that we teach in our courses is what is called excellence orientation. In excellence orientation, we say that you'll only be happy and you'll only be successful when you become excellent at what you do. And excellent means that you become the best. You be the best. And being the best means that you join the top 10%. Now, we're not saying, like the Olympics, you have to win the gold. You just have to be in the top 10% in your field. Now, here's another thing we discovered, is that if you do not commit deliberately to getting into the top 10%, you accidentally, by default, fall into the bottom 80%, and you become mediocre. Nobody who's out there today worrying about money, low income, no increases, unemployed, nobody ever said, when I grow up, I'm going to go out and have a lifetime of financial insecurity. What they didn't realize is in the absence of a decision to become excellent, they are condemned by default to mediocrity. And that was a real shocker to me. So therefore, the starting point is to make a decision. You're going to be in the top 10% in your field. Realize that nobody's better than you and nobody's smarter than you. If somebody else is in the top 10%, remember that everybody who's in the top 10% started in the bottom 10%. Everybody's at the top of your field today at one time was not in your field and did not even know that your field existed. And anything that hundreds of thousands and millions of other people have done, you can do as well. Nobody's better than you. Nobody's smarter than you. So therefore, you ask yourself, you say, okay, I'm going to be in the top 10% in my field. Well, how do you do it? Well, I've developed a very powerful process, simple, guaranteed to work, life-changing. What you do is you realize that in any field, there are only about 5 to 7 key result areas. There are key results that you have to get. Sometimes it's only 2 or 3, but there's never more than 5 to 7. So the first thing you do is you write down and say, what are my key result areas? What are the results that I absolutely, positively have to get to be successful in my job? Now, this act of self-analysis is often life-changing, but can change your life forever. So make a list and then go over this list with your boss or with your coworkers so you're absolutely clear. I'll give you an example. In selling, there's 7 key result areas. Number one is prospecting or finding appropriate people to talk to, people who can and will buy and pay within a reasonable period of time. That's number one. Number two is building rapport and trust with those people so they like you and trust you and are willing to talk to you and are open to your offerings. That takes time, and that's the whole essence of human relationships. Number three is to identify needs accurately. Ask the person questions to be absolutely clear what it is that he or she wants and needs that you can provide before you ever mention your product or service. Number four is to present your product or service as the best way to satisfy those needs, all things considered. And then number five is to answer any objections the customer might have. What about this? What about that? Customers always have objections, and the reason they object is to, first of all, clarify, but second of all, to make sure that they're doing the right thing. And then key result area number six, is to close the sale. And step number seven is to get resales from satisfied customers and get referrals, which loops you back into this top of the process. So the seven key result areas. Now, here's what we find is the chain always breaks on the side of the weakest link. So your success will be determined by your ability to perform at a high level in each of those seven areas. And we've also found this, is your weakest key skill sets the height of your income in any field. And by the way, there's different key result areas for management and for dentistry and for real estate and other things. But in basic selling, those are the seven. So your weakest key skill sets the height of your income. That means you could be good in six out of seven skills, but the one where you're weak determines how much you earn. It even determines more than that. It determines the car you drive, the house you live in, schools your kids go to, the vacations you take, the restaurants you go in, the clothes you drive, your social circle, your future. Everything is determined by the weakest link because the chain always breaks on the side of the weakest link. So how do you become excellent? What you do is you ask this magic question. And the question is simply this. If I could be absolutely excellent, if I could wave a magic wand and be absolutely excellent at any one skill, which one skill would help me the most to make a more valuable contribution? Which one skill? And if you think about it and you look at your list, you'll find that there's one skill that if you were absolutely excellent at, sometimes people say in sales, they say it's prospecting. If I was a fantastic prospector and I had a funnel full of prospects and I had too many qualified people to speak to, I'd be rich. Good. Well, prospecting is a skill, and all business skills are learnable. Remember this, all business skills are learnable. Why is it that people are uncomfortable with a particular skill? It's because they haven't mastered it yet. That's all. It's not that they can't master it, it's just they haven't done it yet. So therefore, you say, all right, what one skill would help me the most? And you write it down as a goal, and you make a plan, and you work on getting better at that one skill every single day until you master it. And it may take a month, and it may take a year, but it doesn't really matter, because as you focus intensely on improving in that one skill, what do you think happens automatically in all your other skill areas? Well, what happens is you start to get better in other areas as well, almost without thinking about it. So one of the most important things you do in life is you identify your most important skill, and you do something every day that moves you toward the achievement of that skill. This is so, so important. Because if you do that, you'll feel yourself getting better and better. Now, there's an interesting psychological factor, is as you feel yourself improving in an area, your brain releases endorphins, which are called nature's happy drug, and you feel happy. And endorphins motivate you and inspire you and drive you onward. So they cause you to want to do more of it and to get even better at it and to read more courses and listen to more audios and take more seminars. In other words, they help you drive you forward, the very act of getting better. In fact, here's an interesting discovery. Your self-esteem, or how much you like yourself, is the critical factor in your personality. And just making the decision to become really, really good at the most important thing you can do to achieve your most important business goal, just making that decision raises your self-esteem. It improves your self-image. It makes you like yourself and respect yourself more. Just the very act of deciding, I am going to be excellent in my field, changes your whole attitude toward yourself and your future. So, the greatest time saver, as I said before, is get better at the most important task. Now, here's a key discovery. And this key discovery, I think, is going to change the world. It already is. It's being used everywhere now in conversation. And the words are deliberate practice. Deliberate practice. Remember I told you about the marathon, people start off and some people get way ahead. Well, there's about 25 years of research that's coming out right now looking into the question is, how did that happen? And so they went back and they looked at all of these people standing around the starting line, and they tried to see if anybody had natural ability, natural talent, seemed to be especially brilliant, and so on and so forth. And what they found is, no, not at all. Is everybody looked up pretty much the same, pretty much the same background, same family, same income, or not same income, but same level of intelligence and ability. But then 10, 20 years later, some people were way ahead. And they went back and they found out what they did from the starting line. And the answer was they consciously identified the one skill that would help them the most now. And they set it down as a goal, and they deliberately practiced the development of that skill. And so the question is, why is it that more people don't do that? And the researchers came back and they found out that deliberate practice is not fun. It's lonely. It's hard work. Nobody sees it, at least for a long time. It's not appreciated until you start to move to the front. It takes a long time before it takes effect. I mean, if you decided you wanted to be an excellent skier, starting today, it'd probably be 3, 4, 5, 6 years before you'd be a really great skier. So at the very beginning, there's very little payback. And so most people quit. But not the best people. The best people, the top people, what they do is they say, all right, I need the skill of negotiating. I need the skill of selling or closing sales. I need the skill of making presentations. I need the skill of reading financial statements. Whatever it is, then they go out and they deliberately engage in a course of study. It's important to understand. They don't just read a book or an article or listen to a CD. What they do is they find a course, a community college, summer school, on the internet, and they take the course, and the course has specific step-by-step instructions, and it has exercises, and it has grades, and it has regular feedback, and it has practice, and so on and so forth. So they really take their own personal and professional development seriously until they have mastered the skill. Then they ask, now, what one skill would help me the most? And you'll find that the lives of people who get way ahead in life are a continuous process of identifying and mastering the one skill that can help them now to move ahead the fastest now. Well, there's what we call the keys to productivity are three things. There are priorities, focus, and concentration. In life, the quality of your life will be determined by your ability to set priorities, your ability to focus with great clarity, and your ability to concentrate with great discipline and determination. I just spoke to a major client lately, got 12,000 salespeople in the field, and they said the most important quality of their top people is that they're better disciplined than others, is that they are disciplined from morning to night. They get up in the morning, they plan their day, they set priorities, they work on their most important tasks, and they work steady, steady, steady throughout the day. And everybody from the top people all the way down can be rated on a scale like 1 to 10 in terms of how disciplined they actually are. So I say that there are certain things that are helpful for success, there are certain things that are essential, and the ability to set priorities, to focus, and concentrate are essential. So this brings us sort of in a back-end way to your most important goal in life. Now, you can have many goals. You can have personal goals, financial goals, relationship goals, health goals. But I think that if you're going to work for a living, you have to have one major definite purpose that is business and financial that you can absolutely measure. And you've got to have a goal that is the organizing principle for all your work. Because as soon as you set a written goal that organizes all of your work around that one principle, your productivity goes up by 5 or 10 times. It's the most amazing darn thing. So one of my favorite questions is this, is what one goal would you set for yourself if you knew you could not fail? What one great financial goal would you set for yourself if you knew you could not fail? If you were absolutely guaranteed a success in any financial goal or any business goal, what goal would you set for yourself? And what you do is you ask yourself, which one goal, if I achieved it, would have the greatest positive impact on my life? Which one goal, if I achieved it, would have the greatest positive impact on my life? And whatever that goal is, you write it down and you make a plan and you work on it every day. And then, going back to the question of what one skill, you ask, what one skill, if I was excellent at it, would help me to achieve my most important goal? And then you find that the goal and the skill go hand in hand. As you develop the skill at a higher level, you move faster toward the goal. As you move faster toward the goal, you are motivated to develop the skill to a higher and higher level. And your life becomes a continuous do-it-to-yourself project. So that brings us to the next focus, and I call this the the sniper versus the machine gun mentality is once you have your goal and your skill, then you have to ask yourself, what one activity could you do right now that would help you the most to achieve your most important goal? And that loops us back to the law of three. You see, what they found is that if you take the 80-20 rule, the 80-20 rule says that 20% of what you do accounts for 80% of the value. Well, there's also the 90-10 rule that says that sometimes 10% of what you do accounts for 90% of the value. What that means is that some things are 5 and 10 times more valuable than others, even though they take the same number of minutes. Peter Drucker, when he wrote The Effective Executive many years ago, said that it's quite amazing. If people have 10 things to do in the course of a day, they will divide up their time equally over the 10 things, even though one of those things may be worth more than all the other 9 put together. But people have a natural tendency to divide up their time based on number of tasks rather than importance or value of tasks. And this goes back to what we talked about before, the comfort zone. And by the way, I said that there were 2 enemies that you had to deal with. The second enemy is the path of least resistance. The path of least resistance is the great destroyer of all hopes and dreams. The path of least resistance is the natural tendency for people to take the easy way, to do what's fun rather than what's hard and necessary, to clear up little tasks rather than to work on big tasks, to do the things that are enjoyable rather than the things that make a big difference to your company. And this path of least resistance is like water running downhill. It's very hard to resist. It's there all the time. You have to be fighting against it all the time because it's so difficult. Every single time you sit down and look at your desk, the path of least resistance looms up. And you think, well, I'll check my email, I'll make a phone call, I'll read the paper, I'll do something fun and easy, and so on. So you really, really have to resist it all the time and realize that the combination of the two, the comfort zone, becoming comfortable doing things of low value, and the path of least resistance is finding it easy and fun to do things of low value, combine all the time. My friend Dennis Waitley says that people focus on doing what is tension relieving rather than what is goal achieving. Herbert Gray, a businessman many years ago, spent 13 years studying successful people and concluded that successful people are those who make a habit of doing what unsuccessful people don't like to do. And what are those things? Well, the things that unsuccessful people don't like to do are the things, same things that successful people don't like to do. But successful people do them anyway because that's the price of success. Many years ago, I heard a talk by Rich DeVos, the president of Amway, and he said there's a lot of things in life that you don't like to do, but you do them anyway because they're the price you have to pay so you can do all the things that you do want to do. And it's amazing how people say, many people say, well, I just want to do what I want to do, and I want to do what makes me happy, and blah, 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 blah. And the fact of the matter is that you have to do an awful lot of things that throughout life that you don't particularly enjoy, but that's what enables you to do the things that you really do enjoy. Now, there are 7 leverage factors. In the military, they have what they call force multipliers. A force multiplier is something that allows a weaker military force to dominate a larger military force. And you'll see this whenever a smaller army defeats a larger army, it's because they use these force multipliers. And in the military, it's speed is one, creativity is another, intelligence is another, concentration of forces at a vulnerable point is another. But in your own personal life, the leverage factors that you can use are basically 7. Number 1, to get vastly more out of yourself, is work harder. Now, this is alien to an awful lot of people, but most people don't work very hard at all. When they talk about the books like The Overworked American, when they do the studies, they found the average American only works about 32 hours a week. They may be at a place of work 40 or 45 hours, but if you take coffee breaks and lunches and coming in late and leaving early, the average person works about 32 hours a week. And of that time, they waste much of that time on low-value activities. So number 1 rule is work harder, is develop a reputation for being a hard worker at your work. Concentrate on your most important task. Don't pay any attention to anybody else. Ignore other people. Put your head down and just work really hard, almost like a mountain climber, just pounding out, going as fast as they can without diversion or distraction. So working harder will bring you to the attention of people who can help you faster than almost anything else that you can do. Now, the second leverage factor, number 2, is to work faster. pick up the tempo. Develop a sense of urgency. Move quickly. You get an idea, move on. If you get a phone call back. You get an assignment, do it right now. It is astonishing how much you can get done if you work in what is called real time. And the rule that I found many years ago from an expert was, if it's a less than a two-minute task, do it immediately. Don't store it and write it down and put it in a stack and anything else. Just smoke through it. Get it done immediately. Call people back quickly. Send stuff out right away. Reply to emails that are important for customers and other people quickly. In other words, do it fast. So pick up the pace. It's astonishing how much more you'll get done if you work both harder and faster. By the way, the faster you work, the more energy you have. And the faster you work, the more ground you cover. The faster you work, the more feedback you get. And the faster you work, the more positive you feel. People working at a very fast rate have high levels of energy, and they're positive most of the time. People working at a slow level of energy are like sort of like molasses. They go slowly through life. Number three is work longer. Now, this is one of the great secrets for becoming a great success. Malcolm Forbes once said that the byproducts of life are spare time. And in a 168-hour week, is you have an enormous amount of spare time. So what you do is you start a little earlier, you work a little harder, you stay a little later. He said that if you were to work an extra 2 hours a day in your field, that would put you into the top 5 or 10% within 2 to 3 years because nobody else is doing it. And I've met so many people that they'll come in at 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning, and they'll have done a whole day's work before anybody else gets there. And then they'll be working on additional projects and taking on additional responsibilities. And then people are shaking their head. How come the person got 3 promotions in 1 year and now has their own corner office with a secretary, and we both started working at the same time? Well, the answer is most people come in at the last possible minute, leave at the first possible minute, and waste time throughout the day. But what you do is you come in 1 hour earlier. So if work day starts at 8, get there at 7. The very best news is you beat the traffic. So you just whip to work. Second of all, work at lunchtimes. There's no law that says you have to go out and spend an hour eating lunch at lunchtimes. Work through lunch. Get your lunch, eat it quickly, and use that time when nobody's around to get caught up on your work. And then work an hour later. Is when everybody else goes home, you're still there. Here's one of the great secrets for success is always be there when your boss gets there and always be there when your boss leaves. If you do that from the beginning of your career, you'll jump ahead 5 or 10 years over people who never even think about it. Get there early and be prepared to leave later. Now, number four is work together. Work as a team. It's astonishing how much you can get done if you work together with other people and everybody does a little bit of the job. You'll find that the most desired quality in the world of work is the ability to function well as part of a team. So you can get a lot of done if you work on what you're good at and have somebody else do what they're good at and have somebody else do what they're good at, and all of you work together on a particular job. It's amazing. I'll give you an example. As I sign books for my clients, and for me to open the box and take the books out and open the books up and sign it and then close the book and then push it over and then do the same thing and get the next book takes a lot of time. So what I do is I have two of my associates at work. One opens the books and passes them to me, and I sign them, and the next person takes the book, closes it, puts it in the box. So it just goes in a rhythm, and what would take me 2 hours takes 20 minutes when you have three people doing it. There are some jobs, by the way, that can only be done by teams, and your ability to function well as part of a team is really essential to personal and time management. Now, the fifth leverage factor is do more important things, which we talked about throughout. Do things that are more important. Do things that are more valuable. Do things that have a higher payoff for yourself and your company. If you could only do one thing, what one thing would it be, and work on that. Now, the sixth way is cluster similar tasks. There's a thing called the learning curve, and when you do several things at once, you write several reports at once, you put together several proposals at once, you make several phone calls at once. If you cluster all your tasks into certain blocks, you actually start getting better and better each time you do the same task again. By the time you have done several tasks in a row, as many as 10, you've actually reduced the amount of time by 80%. So people who put a series of similar tasks together and do them all at once accomplish 2, 3, 4 times as much as people who do this now and then come back and do a little bit of this later and then come back and do a little bit of this later and then come back and so on. Do it all at once. You're going to clear your desk, clear it all at once. You're going to reply to correspondence, do it all at once. You're going to answer email, do it all at once. One of the rules for email, by the way, is check your email at 11 and 3. That's it. Just check your email at 11 and 3 and don't even look at it for the rest of the day. There's nothing important. just your email. I was working with an executive who found he was spending 3 hours a day on his email. And we showed him how to reorganize his email, train his secretary to sort it out, and put vital email into a separate file. He said it cut 2 to 2.5 hours off of each day. He used that time to open 2 branch offices, increase his income by $700,000 the following year. Why? It's because he just stopped doing things that did not have these high, massive values. Once your task, and 7, as we said before, get better at your key tasks. This is one of the greatest leverage factors at all. Of all people, there are people in the same field who earn $20 an hour. There are people doing the same job in the same office who earn $100 an hour. And there are people who earn $500 an hour. And they're doing the same job or selling the same product or service or engaged in the same activities out of the same office with the same company with the same customers. And some people earn 5 and 10 times as much as others. And why is that? As I said before, it's because they're very, very good at what they do. And when you're very, very good at what you do, you tend to get it done faster, you tend to get it done better, people appreciate it more, you create more value, and of course it enhances the entire quality of your life. And this brings us to one of my favorites, which I touched on before, is if you're really going to get a lot done, don't waste time. Don't waste time. According to Robert Half International, 50% of working time is wasted. It's wasted mostly in idle chit-chat with coworkers. It's wasted in surfing the internet, reading the newspaper, drinking coffee, going for lunch, coming in late, leaving early, personal phone calls, personal business, personal shopping, and so on. It's absolutely astonishing. I was doing a cross-country series of television interviews on a book on time management some years ago, and I was going to make this point. I went into this television station. It was about 8 o'clock in the morning. And I looked around, there were 10 people in the station, only one was working. The other 9 were all goofing off. The other 9 were just hanging around, drinking coffee, some had their feet up, reading the paper, someone was eating breakfast. One person was working of 10 people. I looked at that, it's amazing. It's amazing how this could be. And I was talking to an audience the other day, and I asked them a question. I said, now imagine that you got a job at McDonald's. Okay, it's a minimum wage job. You're working with a kitchen crew. Could you sit around, shoot the breeze all day, read the paper, put your feet up, go shopping during the day, make personal phone calls, check your email? Could you do that if you were working at a minimum wage job at McDonald's? And everybody in the audience said, no, they'd fire you in an instant. You'd be fired right away. I mean, the minute you sat down and started goofing off, you'd be fired. I said, yes. And now, how much more do you make than somebody who works at McDonald's? And what disciplines do you put on yourself when you work? Think about that. You think you would never behave if you were an employee at McDonald's the way you behave at your own current work. You'd never do that. I mean, it almost makes you uncomfortable. Think about it. My God, if my boss or supervisor was standing there watching and the clock was ticking and I was working on the hour, I mean, I'd have to be moving. I'd have to be shaking French fries and wrapping hot dogs the whole darn day because there's lots of other people who want this job. So therefore, if you're working at a low-level job, you'd still be working factory job, production job, all day long. Do the same thing. So here's the secret, is work all the time you work. Work all the time you work. It's one of the greatest secrets of personal and time management, is when you work, work. Don't go to work and goof off. Don't go to work and play around. Go to work and work. Put your head down and work the whole day. When you get in there, before anybody else, have your day planned, set priorities, start on your most important task, and just work the whole time. Now, this brings us to one of the challenges. Is the biggest time waster in the world of work is other people. Other people who have no future and want you to come along. And these other people will waste your time. They'll call you up. They will email you. I mean, you all know people that when you hear their name on the phone, your heart sinks. Because, you know, this is going to be a long call because this person will just go on and on like a leaky toilet. So just keep on talking. Well, there's a whole series of recommendations on how you deal with that. But the number one thing to remember is that people who are not working as hard as you can sabotage your career. Because if the boss looks over and they say two people is over there talking, and you're busy trying to get your job done, but you're being polite to this person who's talking, all the boss sees is two slackers. That's all. The boss doesn't say, well, that person is probably keeping this person from working. No, they just see two people are slacking. Does that help your career? I don't think so. So work all the time you work. When you come to work, work. Now, when somebody comes up to you and says, have you got a minute to talk? You say, I'd love to talk to you, but not right now. I've got a job. I've got to get done. I've got to get back to work. Back to work. Back to work. Back to work. And whenever you find yourself faltering or procrastinating or delaying, say, wait a minute. Back to work. Back to work. Back to work. Got to get back to work. Back to work. Nobody will ever try to stop you when you say you have to get back to work. You've got a job. You've got to get this done. I got to get this done. And so therefore, what you do is you say, I've got to get back to work. And for yourself, whenever you're working on a task and you feel like getting up and going and chatting with somebody or wasting time, say, wait a minute, back to work, back to work. Push yourself to the job. Work all the time you work. Working all the time you work will double your productivity tomorrow. It'll triple your productivity within a month. Within a short time, you'll be one of the most productive people in your field. Now, here's a simple time management system that you can use. This time management system is based on my 30 years of writing, millions of books sold, hundreds of thousands of students taught, and so on. But it's very simple, and it has to do with a word, and the word is consequences. Now, when I started studying time management, I came across this word, and I was really impressed with the word consequences, consequences. And here's what I found. I found that something that is important is something that has serious potential consequences. Something that is unimportant is something that does not have serious consequences or has no consequences at all. So therefore, you can take everything you do and you can rate them in terms of what are the likely consequences of doing or not doing this. And that is how you set priorities. That is how you determine what is more valuable and what is less valuable. That's how you determine the sequence of events. So the time management system is very simple. First of all, you start off, and you do this every day. The end of the day is the best time. And just make a list of everything you have to do the following day. If you make a list the evening before, and I do this just before I shut down everything, turn off my lights. If you make the list the night before, your subconscious mind actually works on your list all night long. And you'll often wake up with great ideas of things to do. This happens to me almost every day, by the way. Almost every day I wake up in the morning and I'll have an idea to do something efficiently, faster, better. That was one of the tasks that I put on my list. So it doesn't take very much time. But the other thing is this. One of the reasons that people don't sleep well at night is because they don't have a list and they're trying to remember, not to forget, what they have to do the next day. When you write down a list, it actually just clears your whole mind. And now you can go on with the rest of your evening and your mind is clear the whole time. So you make a list of everything you have to do, and then you apply what is called the ABCDE method to that list. And this ABCDE method, many people said it changed their lives, doubled their productivity, made them more money than they'd ever made before, changed all their disciplines. And it's very simple. What you do is you place an A, B, C, D, or E next to each of the items on your list. An A item is a very important item. This is something that has serious consequences if you do it or don't do it. You put an A next to all your most important tasks that have serious consequences. And then you go by and you put a B. And a B is something that has mild consequences. In other words, returning a phone call, checking your email, these are things that have mild consequences, but they're not as important as A. And these are things that you should do. The A things are things you must do. B things are things that you should do when you get around to them. The C activities are things that are nice to do, but these have no consequences at all. You know, have coffee with one of your friends, read the paper, go across the street, go shopping during the day. These are things that are nice to do, but they have zero consequences on your future. And so you put a C next to all of those things. So now you're clear what's more important, what's less important. Then you go back, and then you put a D next to all those things you can delegate. Remember the comfort zone? The natural tendency of people is when they start doing something, they keep on doing it. Even though it's not that important, it's not that useful, there's somebody else who can do it better. But because they did it and did it well at a certain phase of their career, they keep on doing it. So therefore, ask yourself, what can I delegate to others to free up my time so that I could do more things? And the next letter is an E, and that stands for eliminate. And you eliminate everything that you possibly can so you can free up more time to do more of the things that are most important to you. So now you have your list organized by A, B, C, D, and E, and oops, hold on, I'm just trying to check something here. hold on just a second. I'm just going to change my battery here. All right. Okay, let us continue. And so then you go over the list and you say, all right, put an A1 next to your most important task, an A2 next to your second most important task, an A3 next to your third most important task, and do this for your B1s, B2, B3 as well, until you have all the tasks organized. And then you go through and you start with your A1. And this is really the key to high performance. It is the ability to select your A1. This is your frog. This is the most important task you can do. This is the one task that has greater impact on your life and work and future than any other single task. And your job is to identify that A1 and do that and only that until the job is complete. Your ability to select your A1 task and to start on it first thing and then to work on it till it's done is essential to your success. And this brings us to another wonderful technique in time management. It's called single handling. And in single handling, what you do is you concentrate 100% on your most important task. Now, the payoff for single handling is absolutely fabulous. With single handling, you get more energy, you get more power, you get more enthusiasm, you feel better about yourself, you accomplish more things. As you achieve each task, your brain releases endorphins. So concentrated work on your most important task and staying with that work until it's complete actually releases your potential and dramatically improves the quality of your life. So here are the last 7 techniques I want to give you on overcoming procrastination and getting more things done faster. First of all, 1 is plan and organize your day in advance. The very act of going through planning and organizing your day, setting priorities so your whole day is planned, will make it much more likely that you will leap into your work than if you didn't do it at all. 2 is set priorities and focus on your 1 task. 3 is keep repeating to yourself over and over again, do it now, do it now, do it now. Whenever you feel like slowing down, say, do it now, do it now. And then 4 is say, back to work, back to work, back to work. Whenever you find yourself slowing down, keep saying, back to work, back to work, back to work. Now, here's another technique you can use. 5, it's called the inside-outside method. Now, the inside-outside method is where you start on a task on the outside and just do one small part of the task, and that usually gets you going and gets you started. Sometimes just getting organized and getting ready to go is enough to launch you into the task. 6 is you can use the outside-inside method. That's where you start on a task, but from the center of the task, and you do a core element of the task, and you get that finished. Like, for instance, an outline of a book, to me, is the core task. And then writing the book tends to flow naturally from that. Another way that you can do it, 7, is called the salami slice technique. In the salami slice technique, you just slice off bits of the task, and you do one clean slice at a time until the task is complete. The salami slice method, by the way, is considered to be one of the best time management techniques ever discovered, doing a little bit at a time, because once you start off eating one little bit of salami, you eat more and more. Once you do one little part of the task, you're motivated to do more and more. Now, the 8th is to Swiss cheese the task. And the Swiss cheese of the task means to punch out a piece of the task and just do that. Or punch out another piece of the task, like a hole in a Swiss cheese, and just do that. Maybe it takes a minute, maybe it takes 2 minutes, maybe it takes 3 minutes. But very often, just getting started on a major task gets you going and keeps you going until the task is complete. So the last 3 questions I want to ask you are simply these. The 3 questions in time management are, 1, what results are expected of you? Always be asking, what results are expected of me? And of all the results, what are the most important results that are expected of me? 2 is ask yourself, what can I, and only I do, that if done well, will make a real difference? You see, at every given time, there's always something that you and only you can do, that if you do it really well, will make a big difference. If you don't do it, nobody else will do it, but if you do do it, it can make a big difference to yourself and your business. Always ask, what is that task right now, and do that. And 3rd, and my favorite of all, is, what is the most valuable use of my time right now? What is the most valuable use of my time right now? And whatever your answer to that question is, work on that every single minute. You see, there's always an answer to the question, and your ability to ask and answer that question, to set priorities, to select your frog and to eat it before anything else will double, triple, and quadruple your productivity and make you one of the most successful and highest paid people in your field. So here's the final exercise, and then we'll start answering questions. Let me say that again. So here's the final exercise I want you to think about. Imagine that your boss came to you on Monday morning and said, look, I was at a convention on the weekend, and I won 2 tickets to Paris, fully paid for an entire week. Absolutely first-class airfare, beautiful hotels, all expenses paid. But because of my work responsibilities, I can't go, and I'd like to give these tickets and this vacation to you. But here's the condition. I'll give these tickets to you, and you can go with someone else for an entire week in Paris, all expenses paid, if you can get all your work done today. If you can get all your work done for the following week today, by 5 o'clock we'll give you the tickets. So here's the question. If you were given that kind of an opportunity, 2 first-class tickets to Paris, all expenses paid, if you get all your work done by Friday at 5 o'clock, or by today at 5 o'clock, would you have a cup of coffee, surf the email, talk to your friends, go for a long lunch, go shopping during the day, phone home, see what's going on? Would you do those things? Absolutely not. You would become a working machine. You would work all the time you work. If somebody wanted to talk to you, you'd actually glare at them because they're holding you back from winning the trip to Paris. You would be working all day, every single minute. You'd forget to eat, and if you did eat, you'd eat in 3 minutes. In other words, what I'm saying is that you can be a superb time manager if the motivation is high enough. It's really just a matter of choice. If you choose to be an outstanding time manager, there's nothing that can stop you from being really great at managing your time, as long as you will decide your most important priorities and then eat your frog every single morning before you start. Now, let's open the lines and let me answer any questions that anybody might have.
Sorry about that. Ladies and gentlemen, we're now ready to begin the question and answer portion of this conference. If you'd like to ask a question, please press *0 now, and operator will pick you up. Take your name, and you'll be able to ask your question in the order in which it was received. Please press *0 now. All right, we have our first question. It's coming from Sherry. And go ahead, Sherry.
Question is, if you work in a call center environment where you are constantly inundated with phones ringing and trying to figure out how to organize your day, do you have any suggestions or techniques that might help a staff that's dealing with constant interruption to be able to still use your organizing principles to make their day more efficient?
Well, the very best way is to make sure that everybody knows what the most important thing is that they can do. And as they get distracted in an environment like that where there's so many interruptions, make sure that they keep coming back to their most important task. Make sure that when they get interrupted, they don't just keep getting interrupted and go on and on and get off task. Keep asking, what are the 3 most important things that you do here each day? And of those 3, what's the most important thing? And every time you get distracted, keep coming back to your most important task. Discipline yourself to keep coming back and resist the temptation to do too many small things. It's not easy in a call center environment, I can tell you.
No, it's not.
But you have to keep working at it. It makes it even harder for you to work at it because you have so many distractions. But the critical thing is have everybody know what is the most important thing they do that makes the greatest contribution to the company. And that can be dealing efficiently with each person, handling each problem, handling each call once, whatever it happens to be. Have them keep coming back to that.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next question comes from Garth. Go ahead, Garth.
Hi, Brian. As far as setting priorities, I work in the IT environment, so a lot of times we have projects that are working on that I would put on my list as an A1, but oftentimes we get handed down or instructed that another task or project is an A1. What is your recommendation on juggling those in order to maximize your single handling in that kind of situation?
Well, what happens is when a boss assigns you a task and then a week later assigns you another task, he forgot that he gave you the other task. So the question is very simply, you say, look, I always want to be working on what you consider to be my highest priority. So here's my work list. You tell me what ranks as the highest priority so I can do that. And write it down and go to them and say, I want to be sure. You asked me to do this, but you've already asked me to do that and that and that. Which is most important to you that I get completed first? and always be working on what your boss considers to be your highest priority. Because sometimes it will change, of course.
Sure.
He will say 1 week do this, but the next week, because of external factors, he'll have to redirect you to something else. So then just go back and say, all right, what can I do now? What is the most important task now?
Okay, that makes sense. I have a small follow-up that might clarify for comparing home activities or tasks that I would consider low value or low consequence but are high value to, say, my spouse or my children. Is this the task primarily for work and business life, or can that carry over to home life?
Well, the most important thing we remember is that the reason that we work hard at work is so that we can have a high-quality home life with our children, wife and children. So remember, there's a rule that says it's quality of time at work that counts, high-value tasks, and it's quantity of time at home that counts, spending lots of time with the members of your family. And the whole reason for good time management at work is so that you can actually relax and enjoy quantity time with your family. But never forget that your family's needs take precedence over everything else.
Okay, great.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Next question comes from Kevin. Go ahead, Kevin.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Kevin.
Hello. I have a question about something you mentioned earlier. You said that when you go to work, you just just work as hard as you can, just work all day. But if you do that, wouldn't like other people in the company consider you like not friendly? Would that block you from getting promotions and stuff because you're not like socializing a little with people?
If you are socializing more than 10%, you're wasting your career. That's people get into a rhythm of thinking, well, I've got to get along, I've got to play nice with the other kids. Not really. You can be pleasant and positive and helpful and busy. You don't have to stop your work to hang out with the other people, because the most respected people in every business are the ones that work the hardest. And the people whose respect is important to you are the ones who notice that. The people who can promote you more and pay you more are the ones who respect the fact that you are working all the time you're working. You are really making a contribution to the company. And so those are the people whose respect you are most concerned with. And if you get their respect, you get everybody else's.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay, next question comes from Justin. Go ahead, Justin.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, Justin.
I'm calling just for your thoughts on if you're in a difficult career. I'm a minister of a church, also trying to develop a speaking business. What you might suggest for making progress in the, not your main work, but in the career you're trying to establish for yourself, if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, I'm really big on focusing in like a laser beam on one task at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is almost impossible for you to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that, a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And mm-hmm. So, for example, my son has two businesses. He works on one business about 5, 6, 7 hours a day, and he works on the other business 3 hours a day in the morning. And mm-hmm. when he's working on his morning business, that's all he does. When he works on his afternoon business, that's all he does. He doesn't mix them up. So if you want to develop a speaking career, which is very, very admirable, then what you do is you cut aside chunks of time where you work just exclusively on the work you have to do to get bookings, to plan talks, to speak with clients, and so on. And if you're building a church, then you work exclusively in that area. And you'll get actually twice as much done in each area than if you try to mix them up.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, next question comes from Bernie. Go ahead, Bernie.
Hi, Brian.
Hi.
Maybe the chunks of time may apply to this question. I often find it I'm doing battle between taking care of personal obligations or contacting people I need to contact in my personal life and spending time with them and the professional duties and tasks, like I'm juggling. I'm wondering, should you put all of the both personal and professional and A categories or separate A categories or ABC categories? What are your thoughts on that?
To be successful, all successful people concentrate single-mindedly for long periods of time on their most important tasks. And unsuccessful people try to do lots of things at once and do things of low value and never get anything done. And so it's important that if you're going to work during the day, you work all the time you work. What happens is we go to school, and school is actually our first workplace. So we go to school, and we play with our friends the whole time we're there. We go to class and play afterwards, and after class we go and socialize and so on. We get into the workplace, and we think, well, this is just sort of like school. You know, you do a little work, hang out with your friends, chit-chat, drink coffee, talk about sports. No, it's not. Is when you go to work, it's almost like the metaphor I used of working for McDonald's or working on a production line. You go to work, you work. You have agreed that if you hire me, I will give you a certain quality and quantity of labor, mental, emotional, physical labor. And that's my deal. You give me the money, I give you the work. It's a trade. And so what you do is you make sure that your boss made a great trade, that he or she is getting great performance. The very fastest way to get paid more and promoted faster is to do more than you're paid for, rather than less. So I would separate, you know, friendly. You can be sociable. You can be friendly. Be a nice person, you know, chat. But you're always in motion. It's always clear that you're just not there to hang out. You got work to do after work. Hey, great. Get together after work and on weekends. But right now, I got to get back to work. Back to work. Back to work.
Okay. That prioritize and separate.
Yes, separate the two.
Thanks much, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay, next question comes from Galtu. Go ahead, Galtu.
Yes, hello, Brian. This is Galtu Sanka from Norway calling.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. You mentioned on the issue of leverage factors that working together is effective.
Yes.
How would you suggest that a team of 2 and 3 executives should plan their priorities together, either individually or together also as a team when they set priorities?
Yes, you see, in a team, each person has certain strengths. There are things that they're very good at doing. They can do those well, and they can do them quickly. And in business, each person has certain strengths and many weaknesses. So the job of a team is to identify what is it that each person does really well to contribute value, and then what is it that other people do well, and to divide those up. And that is the very best teamwork you'll find. I have a great team that works with me, and each person specializes and works very hard doing their work, but nobody else's work. And so, so you should set priorities in conversation and discussion. Here's another thing. The more time you take to discuss and agree who is going to be responsible for each task, the faster the work gets done at a higher level of quality. So investing the time has a tremendous payoff in quality work and lack of mistakes and greater clarity.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, next question comes from Jane. Go ahead, Jane.
Hi.
Hi, Jane.
My question is, are those techniques that you talked about, breaking down the job, the inside outside, the outside inside, and the salami and the Swiss cheese, is there a method to decide which technique might be best for a certain job? For instance, writing a report versus doing an analysis?
Well, you have to pretty much use your intuition here. My chosen way of working is to lay out the whole job, and then if I have time, I'll start at the top, and sometimes I'll work 8 hours straight through the job. Sometimes I don't, so I just pull out a piece and do that. I always try to do complete pieces of a job. A complete piece of a job, like has a beginning, a middle, and an end, is much more emotionally satisfying than just working a little bit at the job and then coming back. So keep identifying. Say, I could do that in 5 minutes, or I could do that in 10 minutes, or I could probably do that in 30 minutes. I can't do the whole job, but I can, between now and when I have to leave, I can get this done. And just put your head down and do one piece. And it's amazing. That's often like starting an outboard engine is you suddenly start to feel motivated to go into the next piece and the next piece and the next piece. But use your judgment, and your judgment will tell you based on the type of task it is.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Jane.
Okay, next question comes from Jared. Go ahead, Jared.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, Jared.
Hi, I just had a quick question. I'm also on a commissioned environment. I'm a real estate agent. It sounds like it's already been addressed, but what are like the three key mindsets or the three key things that you keep yourself on track in that environment?
What are your three key mindsets?
Well, an individual's key three mindsets to keep on track, to keep their mind on money-making opportunities or investments.
I don't know. Great questions. But I don't know. There's so many people. Each person is so individualistic. What I do is I always make a list of everything I have to do before I begin, and then I focus on doing the most important task and getting it completed. And I rewrite my goals every day. So there's my methodologies that enable me to be highly productive. But I think everybody has sort of a different approach or no approach at all.
Yeah, because I thought sometimes maybe, you know, you wander off track sometimes, maybe something that could help you, you know, stay on track, stay focused on focused with the thing that I always try to work on.
The answer is always think on paper. Think on paper. Write things down. Make a plan. Make a list of things you have to do. Organize it by priority. Do one thing. Just I often say to a is how often does a tightrope walker balance when they're walking? And the answer is always. In other words, how do you keep focused? You must work at it all the time. You must keep bringing yourself back, because we live in a society that has more distractions than any other time in human history. It's so easy to get distracted into the computer, the internet, the newspapers, the television, music, radio, people, everything else. It takes a lot of hard work.
Okay.
And there's no easy answer. It's just hard work.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, next question comes from Brian. Go ahead, Brian.
Yeah, hi, Brian. Thank you so much for the tremendous value you continue to produce.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, in regard to improving your skills at your most important tasks, you had mentioned it earlier, and I've heard you mention it before. Do you think it's more important to improve upon your weakest link or on one of the three most important impact areas?
Well, again, there's a school of thought that says you should only do what you love, and you do your unique ability, and do what you're really good at, and, you know, farm everything else out. But that somehow doesn't work, because there are certain things that you have to become good at doing so you can do everything else. Like, for example, in selling, you have to become good at prospecting. Everybody says, oh, I want to hire somebody who will call people and get me customers and put me in front of customers. Well, good. So does everybody else. So you've got to become good at prospecting so that you can perform every other part of the sales process. In business, a manager has to be good at hiring people and at delegating, at supervising, giving feedback, and even disciplining and even firing people. These are skills that if you don't have these skills, they really complicate your career. So what you have to do is say, okay, all business skills are learnable. I can learn any business skill that I need to learn in order to be successful in my field. So then you ask yourself, what one skill would help me the most to be more successful right now? If I could wave a magic wand and be absolutely excellent, then you just pick one skill, like a rifle, and you focus on developing a single skill until you've mastered that skill. And as I say, it may take you a long time, but it gets you into the rhythm of continuous improvement. And continuous improvement is really essential for the rest of our lives.
Okay, so it is the weakest aspect of it, the most.
Well, it's your weakest key skill. A key skill is something that you absolutely have to be able to do to be able to be successful in your field, to use all your other skills. Again, using an example in management, a manager has to be a good planner. They have to be able to plan and decide what they want to do and what resources they'll require and how much it will cost and how much they'll have to sell, they have to have a good plan. And then they have to be able to hire good people. I mean, there's certain things. People say, well, I don't like planning. I just, well, then get another job. But there are certain things in every single field that you must master those skills. And that's what they're finding in 25, 30 years of research is the very most successful people. Realize that. They didn't like it. They may not have enjoyed the skill. It may not have been something that they were particularly happy with. But by gum, they knew they could not perform well unless they mastered the skill because they would always be dependent upon someone else if they didn't know it. That doesn't mean you have to become a genius at it. It just means you have to master the skill so that you can use all your other skills at a higher level.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Next question comes from Alfred. Go ahead, Alfred.
Yes, Brian. Actually, my question was touched on earlier and wanted to get clarification between the salami approach and the Swiss cheese approach. What are the differences between those two again?
Well, a salami approach, let us say, for example, I do a major project that has 42 steps. I do it repeatedly. So I sat down and I designed what are all the steps that have to be done in order to produce this product. I worked out 42 steps and I put them in order, and which has to be done first, which has to be done second, which has to be done third. And then whenever I want to produce a product like that, I start off with slice number one.
Ah, okay.
Then slice number two. I can't do everything. I'll just do one slice. Now, it may be that the slice is lower down. This has to be done, but it can be done out of sequence. Swiss cheese is we just punch a hole in something. You've got 5 minutes, so you work on your task for 5 minutes. You work on your job for 5 minutes. You just do something. Make one phone call, reorganize one stack of papers, send two emails. In other words, it's not a lot, but it's just kind of like it's like biting a chunk out of a loaf of cheese.
Got it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, next question comes from Dale. Go ahead, Dale.
Hi, Brian. You talked about emails, and I think you talked about one executive in 3 hours or more of his day, and I find myself in that situation, and I'm just wondering what kind of methods you recommend to control that. You know, I've tried doing a lot of the filtering and get all the junk and stuff going to a junk folder immediately, but I just get so many emails from different people in the company, different projects that we're working on, and it just takes up time.
Well, it's interesting. What really opened my eyes was an article in Fortune magazine where this reporter went on vacation up in the woods for 2 weeks, came back, and he had 800 emails. So he just pushed delete all. And he said his philosophy was, first of all, I'm not going to allow people who are at a computer to control my life. They're not going to take control of my life by sending me an email and demanding my time and life. And that's what people think. If I send you an email, I now own you. You're mine. Now you have to reply to me. And what I do is I push delete, unless it's important to my boss or my company or financially. The second thing is he said was that if the message is important, it'll come back. And surprise, surprise, it came back.
Okay.
And the messages that were important came back. So he instead of working through, he said it would take him half a week, maybe a week to go through all those emails. He just deleted them all. And he did not lose a darn thing. See, you've gotten into a habit. You've probably trained people to send you emails, because if they send you an email, you reply right away.
Right. Uh-huh.
So it's on. Now you're playing ping pong, back and forth and back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. What I do, I'm going to Russia tomorrow. I won't be back for 5 days, and I tell people when I'm out of town, I don't check my email. I won't check it for 5 or 6 days. So people send me an email, and 30 minutes later they said, "How come you haven't replied?" Well, I don't sit at my computer all day long. I have work to do. And so one of the things you do is just turn it off. Do you even put a notice? I check my email at 11 and 3 p.m. 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. That's it.
And you just spend like a half an hour on it, 15 minutes? Or?
Yeah, well, then just clear it off. And don't you know, you know that the protocols, delete, 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 delete. Delete everything that is not clearly important.
Mm-hmm.
And so you handling email is important, but don't get into the fact. I'm astonished. I'm dealing with a multimillionaire today, and I haven't spoken to him for 2 weeks,
and I sent him a message, and he responded back in 3 minutes. I'm thinking, my God, you know, OMG, OMG, what is this guy doing with his life? He's sitting there in Florida, South Florida, hunched over his computer. And so it becomes a habit, and it's fun, and it's easy, and it's entertaining, and it's quick, and human beings like fast, easy things, like Cracker Jack activities. And you have to discipline yourself to stop doing it. One of the ways I discipline myself to stop doing it is I don't take a laptop on the road, and I don't check email. Occasionally I'll check my BlackBerry, and I'll just go through it, and I'll only open the messages that are from my staff or from my clients. I will not even check the others.
Makes sense.
Well, it's not easy to do. Once you get into the rhythm of it, you can free up an enormous amount of time.
Oh, yeah. It's a time waster.
Yeah. Give it a shot.
Thanks, Brian.
Thank you.
Okay, next question comes from Adele. Go ahead, Adele.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing? I'm very familiar with your time management work, which is excellent, such as quantity time and quality time. One of the things I've had a hard time implementing is if you're a young man like myself, you've got a relationship going, and you're an entrepreneur like myself, and I want to work very, very hard, I find that surely as an entrepreneur I should be working 10 to 12 hours a day, but at the same time, it's going to, when I go home, I find it hard to switch out of that gear and focus on the relationship, because I'm thinking, and I love my work, I love my entrepreneurial job, and I'm thinking about that all the time, but it's really hard to change gear. But at home, of course, one must change gear and contribute to making love and doing all the things one has to do to sustain a relationship. So
yes.
What tips would you have to really do that? And yes, thank you.
Well, there are many things I can tell you. I mentioned the metaphor of the tightrope walker. How often do you balance? All the time. Sometimes you have to work long, long hours to get things done. But remember this, is when you are wasting time at work, you're taking it away from your family. And so always remind myself, if I'm sitting chatting with this person at work, or looking at junk email, or shuffling papers, or reading the paper, I'm taking this away from my family because of the law of the excluded alternative. If I do this, I can't do that. So therefore, say, wait a minute, my family's more important to me than this. And just say, no, I'm not going to do this. I'm sorry, my family's more important. My wife wants to go out for dinner tonight, and I have to be there, and her going out for dinner is more important than me sitting talking to you. You can say this to yourself and be very clear about it. Just say, look, I got to get back to work. I got to be out of here at 6 o'clock. I got to get back to work. I had a big thing tonight at 6 o'clock. In other words, be really adamant. And what is your big thing? Your big thing is your date with your family. Or your big thing can be your date with an exercise machine. The other thing that I found that's helpful is there's a law called Parkinson's Law. Parkinson's Law says that work expands to fill the time allotted for it. But the reverse of Parkinson's Law says that work contracts to fill the time allotted for it as well. So therefore, if you give yourself a deadline and say, I'm going to make a list, I'm going to have this list cleaned off by 5:30, 6 o'clock, 6:30, and you just work to the list. You work, like my friend said, like your hair is on fire to get that list done. And you find that if you give yourself a limited time, it's when you give yourself an open-ended amount of time that the job starts to expand like an accordion. If you give yourself a cutoff time and say, by gum, I will have it done by that time, you'll be amazed at how much more efficient you become. So give yourself deadlines. Give yourself cutoff times. Force yourself to have everything done by a certain time. And say, look, I'd love to talk to you, but I've got to get this done. I'd love to check the email, but I can't because I've got to get this done. And just put your head down and work.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good luck to you.
Thank you. Thanks a lot. I saw your traffic guy the other day. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, next question comes from Sean. Go ahead, Sean.
Hello, Brian.
Hi, Sean.
Hey, what's your thoughts on me reorganizing to the point where all I do is prospect, present, and follow up, and have my staff doing all the support activities, the proposals, and everything else? And that way, when I'm at work, I'm dealing with customers. That's it. I don't do all the other stuff.
Good for
what
you.
What I found is they can't sell as good as I can.
No. So that's exactly right. You know, do what you're good at. You know, do what you do best and delegate the rest. You've heard that before. and you need to discipline yourself to do it. You know what I say when somebody says, can you do this or can you do that? I say, I'm sorry, I'm management, not labor.
Well,
that's
there's
your
a,
job.
You know, the thought is you set up systems to, you know, you hire all these people to sell and hire this and that, and I just found that I can't find salespeople to sell as good as I can.
No, you can. You never can. You never can. When I was running a very large sales organization, I was selling at the same time, I was outselling everybody in my organization by myself. And I, you know, at a certain point, you realize, why am I building a sales organization? Because you're hoping that sooner or later enough people will come up and their volume will be greater than yours. But that's true. If you're a great salesman, that's all you should be doing.
Okay, perfect. Because I've been spending all this time trying to hire people to sell as good as me.
Hire them to do it. Selling is a very specialized field. I say it takes as long a time to become great at selling as to do neurosurgery. And if you're great at sales, then just do that all day long. Get everybody else to do all the little things.
Oh, thank you so much. I'll probably make another $100,000 this year.
Good for you. Good for you. I know you will. Next question.
Okay, next question comes from John. Go ahead, John.
Hi, Brian.
Hi, how are you, John?
Doing just right, thank you. So I'm a strategic planner and business consultant for our life and wealth management organization. And over probably the last 10 years, Brian, I've applied most of the techniques and methods from strategic planning in your materials and really have probably got 100 times in productivity over those years. So I just wanted to personally thank you for that.
Oh, good for you. Congratulations.
Thank you. One quick question just to leverage your knowledge a little further. I have, of course, many projects and the underlying task in 5 to 7 key areas of my responsibilities. I'm curious, have you found one software program that has helped you organize the project's tasks, activities better than any other, such as Microsoft Project?
Nope. As a matter of fact, I still use a yellow pad and a pen.
Do you really?
I don't even use software for project management.
Amazing.
I've tried every kind, but I find it's faster to write it down, organize it, sequence it. I just finished a project today where I've taken 30 parts and sequenced them into 30 elements, and I'll put the whole project together within the next week.
And then if you
all on paper.
And keeping track of all those lists, and won't those lists change and projects change? And that's so you'll rewrite, let's say, the priorities?
Yes, I'll rewrite them on a I'll continue to revisit them.
Sure, okay.
And it's an ongoing thing. If your life is complicated,
sure.
Then remember, every minute spent in planning saves 10 minutes in execution.
Right.
Every minute spent in planning saves an enormous amount of time. So don't be afraid to invest time in planning because it saves you an enormous amount of time later.
Right. Now, if somebody can come up with that automated way of, so you don't have to rewrite.
Yep. There's wonderful software. There's wonderful project management programs with
okay.
from Microsoft, and there's
sure.
project. There's all kinds of things. So what you do is it's just sort of like different types of foods or different restaurants. Is you just try different ones until you find one that just fits with the way you work.
Absolutely. Hey, thanks again, Brian. I do appreciate everything.
You're welcome. Thank you. We have time for one more question, and then we're on our way.
Okay. Final question comes from Jenna. Go ahead, Jenna.
Hi, Brian. This is Jenna.
Hi, Jenna.
Excellent. Hi. With regard to socializing, that's building rapport with your customers or your target market.
Yes.
How could one streamline that? How can one make that more efficient?
It's very hard to have efficient relationships, almost impossible. The most important requirement for building a better relationship in any area of your life is time, because you have to be able to invest time, and not fast time, only casual time, conversational time, asking questions, getting to know people, going out with them for coffee, chatting with them about other things. You cannot do it quickly. And the more important the relationship, the more time it requires.
But when you're doing that, it also gives the impression that you aren't very productive. You aren't very busy.
Well, no, as long as if you're working with clients, Jenna, the key is to keep asking questions and learning more about what they're doing and how they're doing it and how it's working. That when as we say in hunting, you stay on point. Is you can talk about family and friends and relationships and everything else, but you keep coming back to the area where you can help this person the most, and you ask them questions about what they're doing in this area and how it's working and what their plans are for the future. One of the great questions is that you can ask is, tell me about your work and tell me about the challenges, the major challenges you experience in your work today. We do this with our clients, and people love to talk about their work, and they love to talk about the challenges they're experiencing. And that gives you an opportunity to see where you can offer your services to help. The big mistake that people make, I'm glad you asked this, I hadn't thought about it for a while, because there's about $20 million worth of research on it. The big mistake that people make is they ask too many personal questions and too few business questions when they meet a client. They talk too much about personal things. And talking about personal things is enjoyable, but it's useless for the client. Talking about business things is enjoyable, but it's very helpful for the client. So the rule that they have found, it should be a ratio of 2-1. 2 business-focused questions for every 1 personal question. And that's the best way to not only build rapport, but position yourself as a professional in the conversation.
Okay, excellent. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. And thank you all. And if you have any questions at all that I haven't answered, please email them to me, and I'll answer them to you personally. We'll send out a copy of the CD very shortly, and we'll send you out a copy of all the notes from this very shortly as well, and just review it. Remember, it takes about 6 times of reviewing information like this before it sinks in and locks in and begins to affect your behavior. So just resolve to listen and re-listen and look at the notes and then follow some of the guidance. And one last thing is select one thing from what you've learned today and implement it immediately. Pick one idea of any kind and say, I'm going to do that now, and do it now. And that will sort of kick everything into gear and start you doing more and more things in the future. Thank you very much, everybody. I'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'd like to give you a free gift as a way of saying thank you for being a loyal supporter of mine and a determined continuous learner. So find out what I've been working on lately and receive your special at www.briantracy.com/learner. That's www.briantracy.com/learner. Just go there right now and see what I've got for you. Thanks again for listening. I look forward to talking to you and maybe even seeing you soon.